to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 17, 2020. Sudan closes down its airspace to prevent the spread of the coronavirus.
The committee decided to shut down all airports, river ports, and all border crossings, with the exception of flights for humanitarian and technical support.
And South Sudanese activists are calling on President Kiir to fire ministers who are not performing.
If the appointing authority relaxes, and that is particularly the president and also the leaders of the various parties, if they relax, the ministers will also relax. And as we have always seen, others may end up engaging in corrupt practices.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese authorities have suspended all flights in and out of the country to prevent the spread of the pandemic coronavirus in Sudan. Mohamed Fakih Suleiman, the spokesperson of the Sudan's Sovereign Council, says the government has also closed all border crossings with countries bordering Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Sudan's health ministry reported the country's first coronavirus case last Thursday after a 52-year-old Sudanese man who had returned from the United Arab Emirates died. Following the unidentified man's death, the Sudanese government shut down universities, colleges, and schools and closed most social gathering places for the next 1 month to prevent the spread of the virus. Speaking in Arabic during a press briefing on Monday evening, Sudan Sovereign Council member and spokesperson Mohamed Al-Fakih Suleiman said the government took swift action in light of the death caused by coronavirus.
The committee decided to shut down all airports, river ports, and all border crossings, with the exception of flights for humanitarian and technical support and other pre-scheduled cargo flights.
Al-Fakih encourages citizens to wash their hands with water and soap frequently to stop the spread of coronavirus. He says the government has established 3 quarantine centers in River Nile State that are equipped to receive suspected cases. Al-Fakih says so far there are no new cases of infection reported in the country after the first case reported last Thursday.
The committee is assuring the public that these measures are only precautionary in order to prevent the spread of the coronavirus and is calling on all citizens to cooperate with the medical and security teams and allow them to perform their duties.
Simon Moga is a South Sudanese who accompanied his sick cousin from Juba to Khartoum for further medication treatment for the last 3 months. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, Moga says he was shocked by the decision to suspend flights even to neighboring South Sudan.
Treatment is over. Tomorrow we are going for the last visit. So after that we are planning to go, but due to the crisis of the corona, all the flights are suspended, and being the head of the family for a long time, being somewhere without the family, there is lots of challenges which is facing them.
Sudanese national Ihlam As-Sadiq thinks the government is overreacting. Speaking in Arabic, As-Sadiq says she believes there is no coronavirus in the country and says closing the airport will hurt the country's economy, noting the government is struggling to provide basic services for the citizens.
They are aware that this decision would have an impact on Sudan. When you close down the airport, close universities and schools, they will affect the country economically. Where can they get income to the country? So what I'm trying to say is that they wanted to announce this so that the World Health Organization could fund them to fight corona.
The government has asked public workers to stay home for a minimum of 2 weeks as the government continues to monitor the situation. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some South Sudanese activists are welcoming the swearing-in of the new cabinet of the Transitional Government of National Unity in Juba. The activists say the new cabinet should come up with a 100-day plan of action detailing their plans for the country. The activists are also calling on President Salva Kiir to fire ministers who fail to deliver. For VOA News, Wake, Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Civil society activists say the swearing-in of new cabinet ministers highlights an important component in implementing the peace agreement. Jame David Kolok, executive director of Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance and chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society Forum, says the ministers should rise above party affiliation and provide services.
All the 35 ministries must produce a 100-day plan of action that is measurable, that can be followed. And after the 100 days, we expect them to report back to the people of South Sudan in terms of what is it that they have done.
David says citizens expect the cabinet to reform the security sector and other areas of government. In particular, he says the government should address insecurity, remove illegal roadblocks across the country, and make sure that traffic officers stop harassing civilians.
We are quite aware that the process of unifying our force has been extremely very, very slow, and that a lot is actually still required in the aspect of training and in the aspect of instilling a culture of a national army to be able to provide the necessary protection that is needed for the refugees and the IDPs to return. We want the parties to take that as priority, evaluate what is pending in the peace agreement, and commit themselves to fully implement that.
David says the 100-day plan should also include providing basic services to citizens like clean drinking water and roads. And he says the new government leaders should demilitarize Juba. Rajapa Mohandis, executive director of the local NGO Organization for Responsive Governance and a member of the South Sudan Civil Society Forum, says the government's mission is clear: restore peace, stability, and the delivery of services to citizens.
How much they will deliver depends on what the appointing authority wants to say. If the appointing authority relaxes, and that is particularly the president and also the leaders of the various parties, if they relax, the ministers will also relax. And as we have always seen, others may end up engaging in corrupt practices and will not help to move the country forward.
Mohandi says partners in the unity government need to clearly define what ministers will deliver to the people of South Sudan. Mohandi calls on the appointing authority to fire ministers who fail to deliver to the expectations of the citizens.
There should be clarity to these ministers that if you do not deliver on this mandate, there will be consequences. And one of these immediate consequences will be losing your position in these ministries. Number three, the appointing authorities need to ensure that the parliament is empowered enough to oversee the performance of these ministers as they move into the ministries.
David says activists are concerned about the failure of the parties to the agreement to respect the 35% positions allocated to women as part of affirmative action defined in the peace agreement, calling it a bad sign.
It is quite unfortunate that actually did not meet the 35 threshold of women representation. We want to take this opportunity to request them as they go to reconstitute the parliament and as they go to appoint the governors. We want to see women represented in all these sectors of governance.
David says activists also want the unity government to reach out to hold out groups under the umbrella group South Sudan Opposition Movement Alliance, who did not sign the deal. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some South Sudanese are saying they want civilians to be appointed as governors of the 10 states. Some of the residents of Juba who spoke to South Sudan in Focus are criticizing the ongoing lobbying by some politicians and communities who want their preferred candidates for the position of state governors. Deng Bill William is a resident of Juba town. He says the scramble for government positions has been the cause of continuous conflict and suffering in South Sudan. Losuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
With a newly sworn-in cabinet, partners in the unity government are expected to nominate lawmakers and governors for the 10 states in accordance with provision of the 2018 revitalized peace deal. Juba resident Deng Bill William believes there is too much politicking going on in South Sudan among certain individuals and communities to gain positions of power.
Personally, you know, this politics of lobby and, you know, who you know is really affecting South Sudan. And it is my wish that at the end of this, you know, transitional period, South Sudanese should get, you know, to elect, you know, their leaders so that we don't have, you know, these weak leaders in the parliament, weak leaders as governors in the states. Each and every, you know, community or individual is pushing for his, like, you know, for his or her uncle, you know, to be appointed or auntie to be appointed as governor and as MP. That must stop.
Juba resident Gadkor James agrees the lobbying for relatives is out of control.
If people are lobbying for searching the job, you can create to bring the people who are not work capable to work to the interest to the people of South Sudan. Like inside the parties, there is some civilian people who have a background to do services to the people of South Sudan, like the PL of education, PL of health, and the other PL of South Sudan, South Sudanese art in Nitu.
James says he expects the parties to appoint qualified civilians as state governors. Juba resident Coach Nial Nial agrees and says the practice of appointing generals as governors must stop.
There's a mentality in South Sudan that all governors should be military backgrounds, politicians. But to me, I'm seeing a leader is supposed to be someone who is aware of the laws that is governing the state. At my perspective, we are supposed to have civil politicians.
Coach is urging the presidency of the unity government to appoint qualified candidates and not listen to individuals from certain ethnic communities outside the leadership.
At the end, you find there are a cycle around the presidency. These are the people who decide who to be appointed based on the criteria that are known to them. And also, we are really tired of this issue of divide and rule strategy that has been used by the politicians, saying Mr. X and X is from this community and Mr. X and X is from this X and Y. That later on keep the citizens of South Sudan being divided.
William and other Juba residents say there should be real reforms in government to ensure the full participation of citizens in the decision-making of their country. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the rate of infection of HIV/AIDS in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In our health segment today, we talk about HIV/AIDS infections in South Sudan. Women and girls in South Sudan are more vulnerable to contracting HIV as compared to men. That's according to health officials and HIV activists. The officials say rampant rape and child marriages have contributed to the spread of the disease among women and girls. Dr. Achol Ayomdor, deputy head of the South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission, says her organization is working in collaboration with HIV/AIDS service organizations and civil societies to achieve a zero target by 2030. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
The South Sudan AIDS Commission says women and girls in South Sudan lack education about HIV and AIDS. Commission officials say only about 11% of South Sudanese women and girls between the ages of 15 and 24 are knowledgeable about how to protect themselves from contracting HIV. Achol Ayomdor, deputy chairperson of South Sudan HIV/AIDS Commission, says another reason more South Sudanese women and girls are HIV positive these days is because communities stigmatize the disease, making it difficult for people to seek testing and treatment.
I went to Marut, and if a nurse, she doesn't know anything about HIV. Why? Because the people, they don't talk about it. They feel ashamed to talk about HIV. Condom, which is something kids buy on the street, women, men buy it on the street. But in South Sudan, it's a problem. You cannot go as a young person and buy a condom.
Chris Issa Gordon, the HIV Prevention Program Officer at South Sudan AIDS Commission, says girls in particular are more vulnerable to contracting HIV compared to boys, due to forced marriages, usually to husbands with multiple wives. He also says cultural norms, which encourage wife inheritance and low access to HIV services, makes women more vulnerable to contracting the disease. Sophia Mkasa, the country director for UNAIDS in South Sudan, says her agency is working with the South Sudan government to end discrimination against people living with HIV.
How are we going to end AIDS by 2030 if we make sure that there is zero stigmatization, there is zero discrimination, which will lead to zero AIDS-related deaths? We did a stigma index study just recently. We shared the results yesterday. And what we found is that there is a lot of stigma and discrimination in South Sudan.
Dr. Victoria Chut, HIV and AIDS Program Manager at the National Health Ministry, says stigma about HIV and AIDS means people are not getting the kind of treatment they need.
People don't want to come to the treatment centers to be seen by relatives and friends that they're going to take ARVs. So we are telling people to stop self-stigma first, to come out of it. And that's why we have clients, we call them expert clients.
Dr. Chut says these are people with the virus who live 30 to 40 years. She says they are included in the training and they train health professionals how to help others who are HIV positive. Only 56% of pregnant women living with HIV have access to antiretroviral or ARV medicines to prevent transmission of HIV to their children, according to the AIDS Commission. The South Sudan government estimates 190,000 people are living with HIV in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
some South Sudanese are complaining that the new unity government has no regional balance. But Abraham Kwal, a political analyst and dean of School of Social and Economic Studies at the University of Juba, says appointments to the new unity government are not based on regional balance or ethnic affiliations, but rather on party affiliations. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juba resident David Lawrence says South Sudan's new unity government is dominated by two ethnic communities and it is not regionally balanced as stipulated in the peace deal.
In the agreement, it says that when the parties are actually allocating the ministerial position or whatever position they have to allocate, that they must put in consideration the regional balance. Now, if you look at other parties, they did not put that into consideration.
Peter Manyang, another Juba resident, says he knows many people who are not comfortable with the composition of the new cabinet, but will accept it for what it is for the sake of peace in the country.
Many years, people are crying, people are running away, people are doing what we need is stability. And if that can bring 15 ministers, 13, 20, as long people will be peaceful.
Manyang says people should ignore regional imbalances and wait for the national election to vote the current leaders out. But Abraham Kwal, a political analyst and a dean of the School of Social and Economic Studies at the University of Juba, says people complaining about the composition of the new government, saying the appointment were based on tribal affiliation, have made wrong assumption about the process. Out of the 35 ministries, he says, 11 were allocated to Greater Upper Nile region, 11 to Greater Equatoria, and 13 to Greater Bahar al-Ghazal region.
What people know is that each party was supposed to bring their people. And you know, when we are talking about party here, if the IO is composed of people from Upper Nile, there is no way they can appoint people from Equatoria. And as a result of that, we could see this appointment was based on your affiliation to a given party.
Kwal says he does not think it is possible for South Sudanese to resort to civil disobedience to protest the composition of the new unity government. He says people often follow what their leaders want and are happy when the leaders are appointed to government positions. Kwal says rather than complaining about who was appointed, people should question the new government when it fails to deliver services.
We want to see how government institutions are going to be mostly reinstitutionalized. We need to see how IO is going to work with other cluster of maybe service delivery, so that by the end of the day, we could be able to say, look here, as IO, you are given this cluster and you deliver nothing.
Kwal says that is when people should focus on the next election and vote out leaders who fail to bring about change. In that way, others will stop seeing South Sudan as a war-torn country and one where people are proud of their own. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The New African Film Festival at AFI Silver Spring near Washington, D.C. is giving movie watchers something to look forward to. There are dozens of movies to see from 25 African countries, including three from Sudan. VOA's Ayen Dengbior sat down with Mweza Matal, the co-founder of the festival, to find out how the African film scene has evolved in recent years.
There's been tremendous change because at the beginning when we started, you had fewer countries making big budget feature films. You had countries like Senegal, Mali, Burkina Faso. But beyond that, there were very few. The Nigerian film industry at the time was just starting out, and it was mostly like the TV type of films and also the ones which are like a part one, part two, that type of not feature films like for festival setting. So you've seen an explosion since we started.
One of the things that I always look for in everything around us is how women are represented. And in the New African Film Festival, women are very well represented, not only on screen, but also behind the camera. Tell us how many women, how many female directors are featured in the film festival, and how important is it to your organization to make sure that women film directors are represented?
Yeah, 40% of the films that we have are by women filmmakers. So whether it's either directing or producing, but one of the leading part of the film, and not just the actresses, but they actually are the so-called brains behind the film itself. So for us, it's critical because we always try to make sure we have some representation. And then we were very fortunate that the films we kept picking, there was a huge number of good films by women filmmakers, and it just happened to be 40%. So it was really a testament to more women getting involved, and maybe hopefully it's a testament to maybe them getting fair access to funding, to getting their stories being presented. We hope that's what's happening.
I'm looking at the flyer from the New African Film Festival, and I already recognize what some of my favorite movies are. What are some of yours?
Oh my gosh, that's asking like it's asking a mother, what is your favorite child? It's like, because we picked them all. The reason why we picked them is because they're our favorite, all the 39, because we went through more than 39 films. So it's hard because they're different. You know, they're very different. Like if you're looking at stories from Nigeria, we have four films from Nigeria. All different films, because people have a kind of a narrow image of Nollywood films, and you have a film from Nigeria, for instance, which is a thriller, which is a really great thriller, which we just showed, The Ghost and the House of Truth, fantastic film, and then you have My Friend Fela, about Fela Kuti, which is going to be aired again today.
And that was actually one of my favorites, My Friend Fela. I learned a tremendous amount from that documentary.
So that's the documentary, and then the other one is a thriller, and then you have Walking with the Shadows, which is really looking at this husband who has a perfect lifestyle, but then his past catches up with him.
What do you think is the future of the African film industry?
I think the future is bright, especially when you look at what people are doing with little resources and the imagination. I mean, because there's always been imagination in Africa, people sitting around the fireplace. It's just an extension of that, of what our forefathers were doing, foremothers were doing along the fireplace. So they're just telling the story like we've always been doing. Now we're using film as a medium. So I think if people stay true to themselves, do African stories, not trying to be something else, like how Osman Simbeni was one of the people who really pioneered this, that just have the film in your language and put the subtitles. Don't try to be anything else. Because even people who are not from your culture see that it's a pretense. It's not you.
That was Mwaza Matal, the co-founder of the New African Film Festival, being screened at Silver Spring outside Washington, D.C. He was speaking to Ayan Dengbior from Washington. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Morka Buahid by Emmanuel Kembe. Listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Morka Buahid. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.